Chapter 22. Crimean Nightmares. Echolocator. An artisan who will enter a book close to publication and locate and destroy echoed words in the work. As a general rule, identical words, with exceptions such as names, small words, and modified repetitions, cannot be repeated within 15 words as it interrupts the smooth transfer of images into the reader's mind. See Imaginotransference Device User's Manual, page 782. Although echoes can be jarring to the eye, they are more jarring when read out loud, which belies their origin from the first Oral Trad operating system. See also Oral Trad Plus Operating Systems History of. Cat formerly known as Cheshire, Guide to the Great Library.
"Ah," said Gran as I walked in the door. "There you are. How are things at work today?"
"Good and bad," I told her, sitting on a sofa and undoing the top button of my trousers. "The good news is I passed the jurisfiction practical. The bad news is that I found I was guilty of my fiction infraction."
"Did they tell you the sentence?"
"I'll have to wait for that."
"Waiting's the worst part," she murmured. "I was up for murder once, and the worst part of it all was waiting for the jury to come back with their verdict. Longest 8 hours of my life."
"I believe you. Did you go home today?" She nodded.
"I brought you a few bits and bobs. I noticed there's no chocolate here in the Walp. Nothing worth eating, anyway."
"Did you find out anything about Yorick Kane?"
"Not much," replied Gran, eating the chocolate she had brought for me. "But he's not in hiding or anything. He's bought another publishing house and at the same time trying to rebuild his political career after that Cardenio debacle."
"Ah, where are Lola and Randolph?"
"At a party, I think." "You look all done in. Why don't you get an early night?"
"And have what's-her-name pester me?" Gran looked at me seriously through her large framed spectacles.
"Aeonis. It's Aeonis, remember?"
"Yes. Who was my husband again?"
"Landon. He was eradicated by the Chronogard, yes?"
I remembered, and my heart sank. "Yes," I said in a quiet voice. I had been happy in my non-remembering state, but now I could feel the anger rising again. "Sometimes I think it would be better if I just forgot, Gran."
"Never say that Thursday,"
said Gran so sharply I jumped, and she had to rest for a moment to get her breath back and eat a few more chocolates.
"Aeonis has no right to take that which does not belong to her, and you must be strong with her, and yourself. Retake your memories."
"Easier said than done, Gran." I tried to grab a chocolate as they were pulled out from my reach.
"I want to dream about Landon. Landon, yes. I want to dream about him again. He's there, but we don't talk like we used to."
The door banged open and Randolph walked in. He ignored us both and hung up his coat. "Randolph," I said, "you okay?"
"Me?"
he said, not looking at either of us.
"I'm fine. It's that little tarty little bitchlet who's going to come to a sticky end. She can't talk to a man without wanting to add him to her collection."
And he walked out.
"Is she all right?"
I called after him, but all we heard was the door to their bedroom slam shut. We looked at each other and shrugged.
"Where were we?"
"I was telling you how I never dream about Landon the way I used to. We used to go to the really great memories we shared. We never got to, you know, but it was wonderful. At least I had some control of where I went when the sable goddess laid down her cloak." Gran looked at me and patted my hand reassuringly.
"You need to make her feel she's winning Thursday. Lull her into a trap. She might think she's in command, but she's only in your mind, and you are the one that controls what you think. Our memories are precious and should never be sullied by an outside agent."
"Of course, but how?"
"Well," said Gran, passing me a chocolate she didn't like, "it isn't Aeonis up there, my dear. It's only your memory of her. She's alone and afraid, too. Without the real Aeonis here in the book world, she doesn't have so much power. All she can do is try and..."
The door burst open again. This time, it was Lola. She looked as though she'd been crying. She stopped dead when she saw us.
"Ah!" she said. "Is that rat-faced shit the brain's in?"
"Do you mean Randolph?"
"Who else?"
"Then yes, he is."
"Right,"
she announced. I'll go and sleep over at Nemo's.
She started to leave.
Wait, I said. What's going on?
She stopped and put her hands on her hips. Her bag slid down and hung off her elbow, which spoiled the illusion, but Lola was past caring.
I went to meet him for coffee after college, and bloop, he's not talking to that little D2 runt, you know, the one with the squinty eyes and the stupid snorty laugh.
Lola, I said quietly. They were probably just talking. She looked at her hands for a moment.
You're right. And what do I care anyway? They clearly deserve one another.
I heard that,
said a voice from the back of the flying boat. Randolph strode into the room and waved a finger at Lola, who glared back angrily.
You've got a nerve accusing me of being with another woman when you've slept with almost everyone at school.
And so what if I have? Screamed Lola. Who are you, my father? Have you been spying on me?
Even the worst spy in the genre couldn't fail to notice what you're up to. Don't you know the meaning of the word discretion?
One-dimensional.
Cardboard.
Stereotype.
Predictable. Jerk-off. Arsehole.
Duck, Gran,
I whispered as Lola picked up a vase and threw it at Randolph. It missed and went sailing over the top of our heads to shatter on the far wall.
Okay,
I said loudly, using my best and most assertive voice.
Any more crap out of you two and you can live somewhere else.
Randolph, you can sleep on the sofa. Lola, you can go to your room. And if I hear a peep out of either of you, I'll have you both allocated to knitting patterns. Get it?
They went quiet, mumbled something about being sorry, and walked slowly from the room.
Oh, that was good. Balls for brains,
muttered Lola as they moved off.
Get us both into trouble, why don't you?
Me? He returned angrily. Your knickers are off so often I'm amazed you bother with them at all.
Did you hear me?
I yelled after them, and there was quiet. I sat down next to Gran again, who was picking bits of broken vase from the tabletop.
Where were we?
She asked. Retaking my memories?
Exactly so. She'll be wanting to try and break you down, so things are going to get worse before they get better. Only when she thinks she has defeated you can we go on the offensive.
What do you mean by getting worse? Hades? Landon's eradication? Darren? How far do I have to go?
Back to the worst time of all, the truth about what happened during the charge.
Anton, I groaned and rubbed my face. I don't want to go back there, Gran. I can't.
Then she'll pick away at your memory until there is nothing left. She doesn't want that. She's after revenge. You have to go back to the Crimea Thursday. Face up to the worst and grow stronger from it.
No, I won't go back there and you can't make me.
I got up without a word and went to have a bath, trying to soak away the worries. Aeonis, Landon, Goliath, the Chronogard, and now Perkins and Snell's murders here in the Bookworld. I'd need a bath the size of Windermere to soak those away. I had to come to Caversham Heights to stay away from crisis and conflict, but they seemed to follow me around like a stray dodo. I stayed in the bath long enough to need to top it up with hot water twice, and when I came out, found Gran sitting on the laundry basket outside the door.
Ready?
She asked softly. Yes, I'm ready. I slept in my own bed. Gran said she would sit in the armchair and wake me if things looked as though they were getting out of hand. I stared at the ceiling, the gentle curve of the wooden panelling and the single domed ceiling light. I stayed awake for hours, long after Gran had fallen asleep and dropped her copy of Tristram Shandy on the floor. Night and sleep had once been a time of joyous reunion with Landon, a collection of moments that I treasured. Tea and hot buttered crumpets, curled up in front of a crackling log fire, or golden moments on the beach, cavorting in slow motion as the sun went down. But no longer. With Aeonis about, my memory was now a battleground. And with the whistle of an artillery shell, I was back where I least wanted to be, the Crimea.
So there you are,
cried Aeonis, grinning at me from her seat in the armoured personnel carrier as the wounded were removed. I had returned from the lines to the forward dressing station where the disaster had generated a sustained and highly controlled panic. Cries of medic and swearing punctuated the air, while less than 3 miles away we could still hear the sound of the Russian guns pummeling the remains of the Wessex light tank. Sergeant Tozer stepped from the back of the APC with his hands still inside the leg of a soldier as he tried to staunch the bleeding. Another soldier, blinded by splinters, was jabbering on about some girl he had left back home in Bradford-on-Avon. "You haven't dreamt for a few nights," said Aornis as we watched the casualties being unloaded. "Have you missed me?" "Not even an atom," I replied, adding, "Are we done?" to the medics unloading the APC. "We're done," came back the reply, and with my foot I flicked the switch that raised the rear door. "Where do you think you're going?" asked a red-faced officer I didn't recognize. "To pick up the rest, sir."
"The hell you are! We're sending in Red Cross trucks under a flag of truce."
It would take too long, and we both knew it. I dropped back into the carrier, revved the engine, and was soon heading back into the fray. The amount of dust thrown up might screen me, as long as the guns kept firing. Even so, I still felt the whine of a near miss, and once an explosion went off close by, the concussion shattering the glass in the instrument panel.
"Disobeying a direct order, Thursday," said Aornis scathingly. "They'll court-martial you."
But they didn't. They gave me a medal instead.
"But you didn't go back for a gong, did you?"
"It was my duty. What do you want me to say?" The noise grew louder as I drove towards the front line. I felt something large pluck at my vehicle and the roof opened up, revealing a shaft of sunlight in the dust that was curiously beautiful. The same unseen hand picked up the carrier and threw it in the air. It ran along on one track for a few yards and then fell back upright. The engine was still functioning. The controls still felt right. I carried on, oblivious to the damage. Only when I reached up for the wireless switch did I realize the roof had been partially blown off, and only later did I discover an inch-long gash in my chin. "It was your duty, all right, Thursday. But it was not for the army, regiment, brigade, or platoon. Certainly not English interests in the Crimea. You went back for Anton, didn't you?" Everything stopped. The noise, the explosions, everything. My brother, Anton. Why did she have to bring him up? "Anton," I whispered. "Your dear brother Anton," replied Aornis. "Yes, you worshipped him. From the time he built you a treehouse in the back garden. You joined the army to be like him, didn't you?" I said nothing. It was true, all true. Tears started to course down my cheeks. Anton had quite simply been the best elder brother a girl could have. He always had time for me and always included me in whatever he got up to. My anger at losing him had been driving me for longer than I cared to remember. "I brought you here so you can remember what it's like to lose a brother. If you could find the man that killed Anton, what would you do to him?" "Losing Anton was not the moral equivalent of killing Asheron," I shouted. "Hades deserved to die. Anton was just doing his misguided patriotic duty." We had arrived outside the remains of Anton's APC. The guns were firing more sporadically now, picking their targets more carefully. I could hear the sound of small arms as the Russian infantry advanced to retake the lost ground. I released the rear door. It was jammed, but it didn't matter. The side door had vanished with the roof, and I rapidly packed 22 wounded soldiers into an APC designed to carry 8. I closed my eyes and started to cry. It was like seeing a car accident about to happen, the futility of knowing something is about to occur but being unable to do anything about it.
"Hey, Fuzzy,"
said Anton in the voice I knew so well. Only he had ever called me that. It was the last word he would speak. I opened my eyes and there he was, as large as life and despite the obvious danger, smiling.
"No!"
I shouted, knowing full well what was going to happen next.
"Stop! Don't come over here!"
But he did, as he had done all those years before. He stepped out from behind cover and ran across to me. The side of my APC was blown open and I could see him clearly.
"Please, no!"
I shouted, my eyes full of tears. The memory of that day would fill my mind for years to come. I would immerse myself in work to get away from it.
Come back for me, Fuzz!
And then the shell hit him. He didn't explode. He just sort of vanished in a red mist. I didn't remember driving back, and I didn't remember being arrested when I tried to take another APC back into the fray to find him. I had to be forcibly restrained and confined to barracks. I didn't remember anything up until the moment Sergeant Tozer told me to have a shower and clean myself up. I remember treading on the small pieces of sharp bone that washed out of my hair in the shower. "This is what you try and forget, isn't it?" said Aeonus, smiling at me through the steam from the shower as I tugged my fingers through my matted hair, heart thumping, the fear and pain of loss tensing my every muscle and numbing my senses. I tried to grab her by the throat in the shower, but my fingers collapsed on nothing, and I barked my knuckles on the shower stall. I swore and thumped the wall.
"You all right, Thursday?"
said Prudence, a WT operator from Lincoln in the next shower.
"They said you went back. Is that true?"
"Yes, it's true," put in Aeonus. "And she'll be going back again right now." The shower room vanished, and we were back on the battlefield, heading towards the wrecked armor amidst the smoke and dust.
"Well,"
said Aeonus, clapping her hands happily, "we should be able to manage at least 8 of these before dawn. Don't you just hate reruns?" I stopped the APC near the smashed tank, and the wounded were heaved aboard.
"Hey, Thursday,"
said a familiar male voice. I opened one eye and looked across at the soldier with his face bloodied and less than 10 seconds of existence remaining on his slate. But it wasn't Anton. It was another officer, the one I had met earlier and with whom I had become involved.
"Thursday," said Gran in a loud voice. "Thursday, wake up!"
I was back in my bed on the Sunderland, drenched in sweat. I wished it had all just been a bad dream, but it was a bad dream, and that was the worst of it.
"Anton's not dead,"
I gabbled.
"He didn't die in the Crimea. It was that other guy, and that's the reason he's not here now, because he died, and I've been telling myself it was because he was eradicated by the Chronogard, but he wasn't, and..."
"Thursday," snapped Gran. "Thursday, that is not how it happened. Aeonus is trying to fool with your mind. Anton died in the charge."
"No, it was the other guy.
Landon?"
But the name meant little to me. Gran explained about Aeonus and Landon and mnemonomorphs, and although I understood what she was saying, I didn't fully believe her. After all, I had seen the Landon fellow die in front of my own eyes, hadn't I? "Gran, are you having one of your fuzzy moments?"
"No, far from it."
But her voice didn't have the same sort of confidence it usually did. She wrote Landon on my hand with a felt pen, and I went back to sleep wondering what Anton was up to, and thinking about the short and passionate fling I had enjoyed in the Crimea with that lieutenant. The one whose name I couldn't remember. The one who died in the charge. Autumn was dark.